It's a building fit for the King of Kings. But while this new and impressive edifice sits in Rome, the cradle of Christianity, it caters to Italy's 25,000 Mormons. With granite from Sardinia, marble from Carrara, this 10-year project may have cut into the coffers. It's believed to have cost tens of millions of dollars. Italy accounts for a small portion of Mormonism's global flock. After starting in the United States in the 1800s, the faith has now swelled to account for 16 million devotees worldwide.
Celebrity chef Mario Batali once sat upon a fast-growing food empire, but that's all now come crashing down amid sexual assault allegations. Batali announced Wednesday that he has sold his stake in the 16-restaurant operation he helped build, along with the family of famed PBS personality and Italian food connoisseur Lidia Bastianich.
On a bad hair day for Europe's markets, investors were looking to a Hugo Boss trading statement for some share price glamour. They didn't get it. The German fashion house's shares sinking too, despite an upbeat statement on Asia and online. "We are ensuring profitable growth in 2019 and beyond," Chief Executive Mark Langer said in a statement. Operating profit, Boss says, should rise faster than sales in 2019, predicting a high single-digit rise in the first of those and a mid-single-digit rise in the second.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's March the 8th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for you, just for you tuning in this morning. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's a senior portfolio manager there. We're going to talk about the economy. Today is jobs report Friday, China trade talks ongoing. Paul is here in the studio, and we'll bring him in momentarily to our conversation a little bit later. Brian Summers will be here from skiff.com for our weekly Friday conversation about aviation and travel. That'll be at about 5:40 this morning. Brian's been following a couple of big stories this week, including an update on what's happening at Southwest Airlines with it versus the mechanics union there. So again, we'll check in with Brian in the second half of the show. Also, we'll keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, where we're watching markets very closely after stocks tumbled in Asia on fears that the U.S. and China may not be as close to a trade deal as President Trump has suggested. Selling also fueled by worries about the global economy ahead of that Chinese trade data. That data is out now. We're going to talk to Paul about that in just a few seconds. But first, the here in the United States, futures are pointing toward opening losses when the bell rings later this morning. Dow futures are down nearly 100 points, down about a half a percent, down about a half a percent on S&P and NASDAQ futures as well. The rest of Asia, the Nikkei down nearly 2%, 430 points. The Hang Seng down nearly 200 points, 550 points. The Shanghai down nearly 5%, off nearly 136 points. In Europe, markets are lower by about a percent in London, in France, and in Germany, down by about a half a percent as well. And oil is trading at $55.70 a barrel in the U.S., 96 cents lower than the last check, down nearly a percent and three quarters. So those are the numbers from Wall Street, some overnight intel and early morning intel on markets. This morning, a couple of stories that we have just at the top of the broadcast here. The Labor Department wants to raise overtime eligibility to nearly $35,000 a year from the current threshold of $24,000. That would make fewer people in that lower bracket eligible for overtime. The Obama administration tried to set a much higher salary, more than $47,500, but a Texas judge suspended the rule before it took effect. He later invalidated the rule. Airbnb says it's buying the hotel booking site Hotel Tonight. Airbnb has been expanding its offerings in recent years as it prepares to go public this year. It was last valued at about $31 billion. Ahead of the IPO, Airbnb has been moving beyond its core business of short-term home rentals and now bills itself as an end-to-end travel platform. As for hotel tonight, it was last valued at about $463 million. Front and center this morning will be the February jobs report. That's among the top data number points that we'll be discussing this morning. Economic news as well with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul's an SVP and senior portfolio manager there. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
I don't know where to begin. There's so much going on. Let's begin with China and the markets in Asia. China and Tokyo down 2% and 4% respectively. Those are big drops.
They are big drops, and it's really centered around trade and China. When you take a look at their exports, they fell dramatically in the last month. There's some discussion in the markets that it's due to their Lunar New Year, which they celebrate, and they essentially shut down the entire country. So it does put in a little bit of noise because it's not at the same time each year. So it's kind of hard to seasonally adjust those numbers. So it does create a little bit of noise. But it does point up the fact that with the United States trade deficit ballooning now to the largest we've had, and trade problems with China, and the fact that they're not importing as much and exporting as much, it leads more credence to the fact that the global economy is slowing down. And we saw that in comments yesterday from Draghi, the ECB president, and part of the reason why they're starting their quantitative easing part 3-4 that they're on now in making funds available to banks at essentially zero interest rates in an effort to try to boost the European economy. So we're seeing a lot more signs now that the global economy is slowing. And even though our GDP was pretty good in the most recent report for the fourth quarter, it pulls into question that we're going to be able to continue doing that all by ourselves going forward.
The U.S. ambassador to China this morning says no date has been set yet for that summit and that a trade deal is not imminent. That seems to be different from what we've been hearing from the White House over recent days.
Yeah, well, and you know, one of the things that I saw over the weekend, somebody pointed out a headline from the Wall Street Journal. Almost every month there's been a headline that U.S. and China is very close to a trade deal. And even though that came out again on Monday, I think the markets called BS on it and have not traded well since Monday, because we've heard this consistently and we're not getting any more news on the fact that I think the markets now are really looking at, we're from Missouri, show me. Right. We want to see a deal. Don't tell us that we're close. And until we see something a little bit more concrete, I think the markets are going to kind of struggle with the fact that it's out there in the future, and it's an unknown future.
Yesterday, as the Dow was sinking about 200 points lower at one point, there was a tweet from the president saying talks are going very well. One who might be a little bit questioning of some of these things would say, well, was he just trying to tweak the markets yesterday in doing that? And is that the BS that the investors are seeing?
Well, I think that's part of it, you know, and it's a little bit like crying wolf. You know, after a while, the markets are like, okay, we've heard this now 6, 7, 8 different times. We want to see a little bit more concrete. We want to see some details. We want to see that we have a deadline. We're not seeing any of that right now. So it's, for the market's perspective, what they're seeing in a lot of the economic numbers is the fallout from the lack of a deal. And we've been going on now for a year without one. And even if we sign one today, we're not going to see a turnaround in the economic numbers for probably 6 months or so. Certainly the markets will be happy about that. But again, it's going to depend on what kind of deal it is. So right now a deal is still well into the future.
As we watch Asian markets this morning, down 400 points in some cases, is that going to bode bad for the U.S. stock market today? Are we going to continue to see this go down as we move through the afternoon?
I think, yes and no. I mean, certainly when the China data came out, the U.S. futures markets traded down, were recovering a little bit. And of course, today's Jobs Friday. And I think the markets will be pretty focused on the jobs report, more on the wages than maybe the headline number. But I think when you're taking a look at the markets, Asia is a big concern. One of the markets that we take a look at is the Taiwan market, actually, is because that one is very sensitive to trade. And that's been trading lower now for the last 2 or 3 weeks or so. And that points to some issues in global trade. And if global trade is not doing well, the global economy not doing well, and it's a domino effect, and it's what we're seeing in the U.S. market. So as we talked about last week, we're seeing this more as a correction in that huge run that we've had since Christmas Eve. It's been straight up 9 out of 10 weeks. So the market was certainly due for a breather. This is maybe a reason for taking some money off the table, but we're not seeing that we're going back to the December lows just yet. We're looking at this more just as a correction.
Paul, it is Jobs Report Friday. Economists, depending on which ones you talk to, see 175,000 jobs maybe created this month. What's your bet?
because this number is all over the board.
What's your bet
now? I got $20 on 185,300 jobs. I think when you take a look at the jobs report, we had such hot numbers the last couple months, over 300. And both of them actually got, or the first one got revised a little bit lower. This one will probably get revised lower. The number should be a little bit noisy because of the winter, the cold, the snow, etc. Again, we're going to be keeping an eye on wage growth. And wage growth should bump up a little bit. We might be running at about 3.5%. Which is the fastest since the beginning of the recession in 2009. From a jobs perspective and from an employee's perspective, that's actually a good thing. If wages are growing at 3.5 plus and inflation growing at about 2, that means that the average wage earner is keeping ahead of inflation and they actually should be able to save a little bit more.
There was some data this week, too, and you talked about wages, that companies are paying more. They're finding other ways to pay more, the bonuses and vacation times. So the cost of doing business was up. I'm referring to the Beige Book numbers.
Right. And we've talked about that in the past as we come up to the different jobs reports, in that companies are trying to do something other than just straight wages. Costco made the comment we just heard at the break. They're raising their minimum wage to $15 an hour. A lot of companies are trying to avoid increasing wages because that's something that they can't take back. If I pay a bonus, if I give you a little bit more vacation time, etc. Some of those, the bonuses certainly are not guaranteed every year. The cost of vacation is negligible for a company from a dollar and cents perspective, but very important from an employee's perspective and trying to keep those employees around. So companies, I think, are trying to be a little bit more creative and trying to hang on to employees. And certainly with the very tight labor market that we have right now, they're looking for creative ways to get employees as well as keep them around.
Because there's also the data that shows employees have really no hesitation to jump now to find another job if they don't like what they're doing now.
Right. And that's a function of a very tight labor market. So, it's a little bit easier now, certainly if we're in a recession or an economic decline. Jobs are a little bit harder to get. They're a lot easier to get right now. So if I'm not happy where I'm at today, it's a little bit easier to find something somewhere else and make that move. And you'd like to see that in a job market where that fluidity is good. We had issues coming out of the recession where the housing market was a very important part of that in having people not necessarily moving within the city of Chicago, but say moving from Chicago to Phoenix or San Diego or somewhere else to find a job. It was very hard to do because then you had to sell your home here, which was underwater, to buy a house somewhere else. That situation's a little bit better now, and it's created a little bit better environment for people to move about the country and not just within the city environs.
You mentioned earlier this might be a good time to take some money off the table in the What Do You Like segment of our conversation. Maybe some advice, too, on what you like if you're going to buy something else.
Yeah, what we've done just really this week is to take a little bit of money off the table. We're pretty fully invested coming out of the end of the year and the beginning part of the year. And after, as I mentioned, after 10 weeks of pretty much a straight-up market, We thought it prudent to take a little bit of money off the table. We liked a little bit more of the defensive parts of the market. We have continued to like the value part of the market as opposed to growth, the FANG stocks. So we're a little bit more interested in some of the staples, some of the consumer discretionary names. We think companies like a Starbucks or a Nike should do okay in this environment that we're describing. It's not robust economic growth. It's good economic growth, and those companies should continue to do pretty well here.
Well, Paul, you'll be back a little bit later on. We'll do a podcast on the jobs report.
Absolutely. Okay. We'll pull that apart and get into the details. It should be an interesting report. You know, we've had two that have surprised to the upside, and this one could be another surprise, and it may be a little bit on the downside. But my betting would be that we're going to be maybe if we miss, we'll miss on the low side here. So it should be an interesting market day.
Good. We'll get that posted for all of you out there. Hopefully around 10 o'clock is when we try to get that up. And Paul, how can people get a hold of you if they want to have a conversation?
Yeah, we can continue the conversation via email. And then the best way to get a hold of me is pnolte@kingsviewam.com.
All right, Paul. We'll see you a little bit later on and again next week.
Absolutely.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. It's
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
We're back here on our Friday edition of the program. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Our focus now shifts to aviation and travel. Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com, is with us every Friday morning, and he's with us again today from Los Angeles via Skype. We'll begin this morning, Brian, with the latest update on Southwest Airlines versus its mechanics union. Some new details about what's going on at Southwest.
You're right, Steve. For a while now, Southwest has been having some problems with its mechanics. Southwest says a lot of work is perhaps taking longer than it should, and the mechanics are writing up things that maybe they haven't written up in the past, and this is leading to a lot of cancellations and a lot of flight delays. Southwest says twice as many airplanes on some days recently have been out of service compared to usual. Southwest has long said that this could be part of a labor dispute. The mechanics do not have a long-term contract with Southwest. The sides have been negotiating for about 6 years. So that's old news. What's new is Southwest finally went to federal court to try to put a stop to what it says is this job action. This is not that rare in the industry, but Southwest is asking a federal judge to basically say, mechanics, knock it off. We know that you're in a contract dispute. We know that you need an agreement with the airline, but you basically have to work in the same way that you worked before the dispute. These things can be hard to prove, right? I mean, the mechanics say, look, our job is to point out safety issues with aircraft. We're writing things up that need to be written up. You're making the call to take the planes out of service, and this is just the way it is. Southwest, in its complaint, basically points to historical data and says, you never wrote up this stuff in the past. It's very odd that you're doing it now, so you need to knock it off. I think it's possible that a federal judge will give the airline some relief and tell the mechanics to stop what they're doing or what Southwest thinks that they're doing. I don't know about the long-term solution. I think both sides need to come to an agreement so that there can be a new collective bargaining agreement and things can go back to the status quo. I don't know when that's going to happen. I wish it could. I'll take it personal here for a second. I'm going to be flying Southwest in a couple of weeks, and I've noticed these increased delays and cancellations, and I'm a little bit worried. You know, what if my flight is delayed or canceled? But I have to tell you and the listeners here, Steve, that I am not worried about safety. Southwest is a very safe airline. It's just because of this, they're not running the operation that they want to.
Yeah, and since our conversations have aired, I've heard from a couple of people, listeners, who are also customers of Southwest, and there's that little tinge of question in their minds about whether or not, you know, if the union is right and there are more safety issues that they're dealing with, let them handle that. Why get involved in that? So there is a little bit of consumer concern here.
There certainly is, Steve. Again, I don't know that consumers have that much to worry about here, and Southwest is being proactive, right? When the mechanics write up this stuff, Southwest isn't saying, let's fly the airplanes anyways. They are grounding the airplanes, and they're making the fixes that the mechanics say need to be made. But this is slowing down the airline a little bit.
American has similar issues. What's going on at American with this?
Yeah, you know, these sorts of things happen, Steve, when an airline is in tough labor negotiations sometimes. American isn't as bad, but American has been having ongoing labor negotiations with its mechanics. The mechanics are upset that American wants to maybe outsource or what they call offshore more work. And so the sides have been negotiating for a long time. The American Mechanics Union does come out in public and they talk to people like me and they're very upset and they say lots of things. To the best of everybody's understanding, the airline's operation is not being affected that much or even at all. So flights are going on as they always have. But American also needs a new contract agreement with its mechanics.
Let's move on to another story that's out there. It's involving United Airlines. Some discussion about when to delay flights for late running passengers.
Yeah, this is a fun one, at least for me, Steve. We've talked about this on the program before. A lot of airlines, United included, are obsessed with this airline industry metric called D0. D0 means flights that leave exactly on time or perhaps a little bit early, but not 1 minute late, not 2 minutes late, not 5 minutes late. And so this is why you'll see a lot of airline employees closing the door and rushing to get out of there exactly on time. The problem with that is sometimes airlines know that there are some connecting passengers who are running just a little bit late because their last flight was late. And if you were to delay this flight for 5 or 6 minutes, those connecting passengers would make it. But a lot of airlines will just close the door on them and say, look, we've got to get this plane out. We have people on it, and the people who missed their connection need to wait for the next flight. United says, look, we have better data right now, and we're not going to be so rigid. So if we think that we can delay a flight 5 or 10 minutes or even 15 to wait for connecting passengers, we are going to do it, so long as we don't create further problems down line, right? So if a flight leaves 15 minutes late and then it arrives, say, in Chicago 15 minutes late, now you're creating more misconnection opportunities for more people. But people know that a lot of times flights, just for various reasons, end up arriving 20 to 30 minutes early or something like that. So United's going to say, look, we can delay flights and take a delay on departure if we know the flight is going to still arrive on time. United talked about this at an investor conference this week, and it looks like something they're going to roll out. Steve, you know that I am a super flyer. I fly a lot. I, believe it or not, don't love this plan that much. I like it when my departure card, my boarding pass says I'm going to leave at a certain time and the flight pushes back at exactly that time. I don't, hate to say it, I don't love waiting for connecting passengers. Sometimes I miss a connection. I understand what that means and I'll take the next one. The plane that already has 200 people on it should just go out on time. That's just my opinion.
Well, and also it's I think what you're talking about is this dynamic D0, and it's happening at Denver, I guess, is where they're testing it, where they're giving gate agents more power to delay the departure, do it exactly what you're talking about. Sometimes those gate agents can make the wrong decisions, I'm guessing.
You know, sometimes they do, although part of the excitement, I think, for United about this program is the gate agents are going to have much better data. So a lot of airlines in the past, you know, 10 years ago, the gate agent or even the pilots would make a decision about whether to delay a flight, but they wouldn't have all the information about what it would mean for the airline the rest of the day or the people on the plane. Now United says we can make a pretty good guess that we can delay this flight, wait for the passengers without creating further problems later in the day, right? That's a big problem because you do not want to delay a flight 15 minutes and then realize that all of your flights for the rest of the day are going to be delayed 15 minutes on that plane because you're now behind.
There's another story, Brian, I want to get to before we let you go this morning. American and Delta settling some claims over long tarmac delays, people sitting on the runway.
Yeah, these are pretty small fines, Steve, but the Department of Transportation came out recently with a couple of fines against American and Delta. American is being fined $1 million. Delta is being fined $750,000. Each airline doesn't even have to pay the whole amount. They're basically getting half off for what I would joke is good behavior. People may know that the U.S. Department of Transportation came out a few years ago with new guidelines for ground delays. And basically, airlines are supposed to let passengers off the airplane during a delay within 3 hours for a domestic flight and 4 hours for an international flight. And this came after lots of folks had complained that they were basically held hostage on airplanes, right? We've all heard these stories over the years of folks having to spend 7 hours on an airplane and the airline wouldn't let them get off and there was no food or water and the toilets overflowed. So the Department of Transportation came out and said, you can't do this. You have to let people off in a reasonable amount of time. Most airlines are very good about this. They track these tarmac delays, so they generally know when they need to let people off the airplane. But American Airlines has, I think, 6,700 flights a day. Multiply that by a year. It's a lot of flights, and sometimes mistakes are made. Sometimes people end up on the airplane longer than they should, and that's why the Department of Transportation came out and issued these fines. They were in relation to specific mistakes that American and Delta made on specific flights. So one of the things that they noticed with American is American for a while there, I think, was pretty interested in what the industry would call gas and go. So you might be planning to land in Chicago. There was bad weather in Chicago. You would divert to Madison, Wisconsin. Instead of letting you off the airplane, American would say, you know, we know O'Hare is going to open soon. We're going to get fuel in Madison, Wisconsin, and we're going to wait to depart, and we think we can do it in this window. Many times they're right. Sometimes O'Hare doesn't open when they think it will. People end up spending more time on the airplane than you think.
Okay, Brian, good conversation. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
Brian Summers is Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter and Skift.com. And follow Brian, too, on Twitter at Brian Summers.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses later when the opening bell rings. The Dow futures off 103 points this morning, nearly a half a percent. S&P and NASDAQ futures off from a third to a half a percent. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning to you. And we'll continue this travel conversation you've been having with the airline industry this morning, because this week the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it was taking additional steps to make sure we can keep African swine fever out of the United States. And this is the announcement USDA made this week. Coordination with Customs and Border Patrol to expand the Beagle Brigade by 60 new teams for a total of 179 Beagle teams at key U.S. airports and seaports. And arrival screenings at key U.S. airports and seaports, including checking cargo for illegal pork products and ensuring that travelers who pose a security problem receive additional agricultural inspection. So there are a few more steps being taken as well. African swine fever doesn't affect humans, but boy, it sure does affect hogs. It kills within 2 days. No vaccine available to stop it. And Steve, I can't emphasize enough that people who are traveling outside the U.S. and who come back to the U.S. fill out that card you're handed on the airplane before you land honestly and accurately, particularly if you have been on a farm. Let the department officials at airports know that by putting it down on that card. I know people who think, well, if we say we've been on a farm, then we'll take longer getting through the customs and agricultural inspection. Believe me, it is worth it.
It's always going to be nice to see a few extra beagles at the airport. Just a reminder to people, they're cute, but just whatever you do, don't pet them. They're not there to be petted.
They're not, and we have a friend who is a trainer of dogs for police work and for airport work, and it's fantastic. at the work those dogs can do to detect drugs, or in this case, a swine fever situation. They're amazing animals. They really are.
Yeah. Orion, we've hit this trade story over the head quite a bit, and here we are again today asking where it's going. We're all, I don't know about you and the farm community, are everybody kind of tired of this now, or do we, what's the situation?
Well, I know I'm tired of it, and I think a lot of people, farm and non-farm people involved in this area, I think they're saying, let's get it done. And that way, I don't know about you, but almost every market report I start, we have to talk about China and the U.S. One day it's optimistic, the next day pessimistic, and the markets go up and down with it. Yesterday we saw livestock futures trade higher, but we saw grain futures trade lower, again, because of reaction to this trade talk. Let's get it done.
Yeah, good advice there. What's on the morning show tomorrow?
An interesting program in the morning. We have the chairman and chief executive officer of the CME Group. Terry Duffy is going to join us on the show tomorrow morning. And I've known Terry for a long time. He started out as a trader in live hog futures at the Mercantile Exchange. Today he's the chairman and the chief executive officer, and so he's gone through a lot of change in that activity, and we'll spend quite a bit of time with him tomorrow morning.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
Orion Samuelson will be tuned in for the morning show tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, March the 8th. February jobs report due out today, 175,000 jobs. According to economists, unemployment rate forecast to fall 1/10 to 3.9%. Housing, building industry, the housing starts are out today as well. Building industry analysts see an annual rate of 1.17 million homes breaking ground in January. We'll also get a couple of Fed speakers, including the Federal Reserve Chairman himself, Jerome Powell, Mary Daly, also speaking today. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, March the 8th.